This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. Washington State has made a commitment to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and this year the legislature passed a bill to phase out the Centralia coal plant, a significant source of our emissions. But just as Washington State was moving towards phasing out the Centralia plant, we became aware of plans to develop terminals in our state for shipping coal to China. What are the environmental implications, and should we allow coal to be sent to China through Washington State ports if we want to address climate change? To help answer this question, I have as my guest Casey Golden, Policy Director for Climate Solutions, a nonprofit that works to accelerate practical and profitable solutions to global warming. Welcome, Casey.
Thanks, Diane. Great to be with you.
Good to have you back on the sustainability segment. Would you like to begin by reminding us of the implications of burning coal for climate change?
Coal is the dirtiest and most carbon-intensive of all the fuels we use, and the single biggest fuel source of global warming pollution in the world. We sometimes forget that here in the Northwest because we have a lot of renewable hydropower in our energy mix. We don't use as much coal as some other parts of the country, but we still use quite a bit. And as you mentioned, we're phasing out our one big coal plant in Washington State. We still rely on some coal-fired power from Montana. Puget Sound Energy's customers receive that coal-fired power. And pound for pound, it creates more global warming than any other energy source.
Would you comment just briefly also on the effect of burning coal on other environmental issues and also human health?
Yeah, coal is also a huge source of toxic air pollution, smog-forming pollutants, haze-forming pollutants, mercury air toxics, and it also has huge impacts at the places where it's mined. We don't see it so much in the Northwest, but they're blowing off mountaintops in West Virginia to get coal. And even in the Rockies, the strip mining has very, very big impacts on the ecosystems and communities where coal is dug up out of the ground.
What commitments have been made so far in Washington State to address global warming?
We have a statewide commitment to reduce our climate pollution back to 1990 levels by 2020, to reduce it 35% below 1990 levels by 2035, and over 50% by 2050. To give you a sense of scale, that's a good start, and it's a lot of work. We need to do more than that in order to do our share to stabilize global warming pollution. But we are getting started with the real work of building the clean energy systems, the clean energy economy, the transportation alternatives that can get us over that hump of emissions and on that trajectory toward basically phasing out our fossil fuel consumption by 2050, which is what we got to do if we got a hope of staving off dangerous climate change.
So as I mentioned in the introduction, the Centralia coal plant will be phased out, lessening our greenhouse gas emissions in Washington State. But now we have plans to develop terminals to ship coal through Washington State ports to China. What exactly is being planned?
Yeah. If I could just take a second to pause on that Centralia story, because it's such a terrific story and a terrific turning point. And what folks may not know about it was 10% of our state's climate pollution, as much climate pollution as 2 million cars. And not only are we going to be phasing it out, but we're going to be doing it with the unanimous support of the labor unions and the community and the utilities and the company that owns the plant. Everybody sees the same writing on the wall. We have got to phase out this dirtiest of all fossil fuels and get on the road to real climate solutions. So it's a terrific story, but it is, as you suggest, kind of an interesting prelude to this question about whether we are going to take that exact same coal that we don't burn in Washington State, multiply it by 20, and ship it through our ports to China, where it will get burned in their power plants and bake the planet anyway, while creating jobs primarily in Asian economies.
Would you go into a bit of detail about what is specifically being planned, both in Longview and near Bellingham, the two places at this point that are being proposed for terminals?
Right, and there may be others before we're done, but at those two ports, the biggest coal companies in the world, Peabody and Arch, are talking about digging coal up in Montana and Wyoming in the huge deposits, one of the world's largest deposits in the Powder River Basin up in the Rockies, shipping it over, you know, Northwest railroads and into not the public port of Bellingham, but Cherry Point near Bellingham and another private port near Longview, up to 100 million tons or more a year of coal coming through on coal trains that are over a mile long, six, seven, eight of those coal trains per port per day, being loaded onto big ships, big, you know, sort of world-class size ships at those deep water ports, and hauled over to China using bunker fuel in the ships to haul the coal and then get burned in Chinese power plants to power the growth of the fast-growing Asian economies. And the thing that is so concerning about that from a global perspective is the biggest issue, the biggest factor in whether we turn around the climate crisis while there's still time is the direction of the energy infrastructure investments that are made in those fast-growing Asian economies. China alone has added more coal-fired power in the last 10 years than all the coal-fired power that exists in the United States, and they're on pace to do that again. Well, those coal power plants are very long-lived. They're very capital-intensive. Once they're built, the economic incentive to just keep stoking them with coal is overwhelming for decades and decades and decades. So the problem is, by opening up these huge global supplies of coal to these economies, it gives them the green light to build out this 50-year infrastructure that locks in emission trajectories that create dangerous global warming. So from a global perspective, that's why this is such a big deal. From a local perspective, it also has huge impacts on the communities involved, not just the port communities, but even the communities through which the railroads pass. One of the primary rail lines probably comes right across the waterfront and through the Sculpture Garden in Seattle. Hundreds of millions of tons of coal spewing coal dust, which is toxic and pollutes the environment around the railroad tracks. It's extremely noisy. These trains are very long and very slow. They tie up traffic and obstruct intersections in the communities that they go through. They're a health, noise, and quality of life hazard for all the communities that they're going to go through, and particularly those port communities.
Would you comment on the reason for the coal companies choosing this particular point in time to look for an increased export market for coal? You mentioned that there is a big market in China, but what else?
Well, that's the biggest. But ironically, it's in part because we've got a better way to meet our energy needs here in America, and we're figuring out how to do that. So the domestic market for their coal is softening as we get smarter and smarter about developing cleaner energy sources. Natural gas is relatively cheap right now, and coal's finding it hard to compete with that. And step by step, we're scrubbing the coal out of our energy system because we've got cleaner, more sustainable, more economical ways to meet our energy needs. So it's especially ironic that this coal would be passing right through our front yard on its way to China. But the growth of the Asian economies and the enormous demand growth over there is probably the single biggest driving factor. Still, when you think about it, just from a practical sort of logistical perspective, the idea that they're going to dig up half of Wyoming and Montana and put it on these long trains year after year, day after day, and send it through our ports to China on these big ships to burn in their power plants to make the toasters that we buy at Walmart is just a little far-fetched in some way. To me, it says these coal companies are desperate. This is an ambitious, audacious, desperate scheme to save an obsolete industry that's on its last legs.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Casey Golden, Policy Director for Climate Solutions. Our topic is the environmental implications of allowing coal to be shipped to China through Washington State ports. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Would you also comment a bit more on why the companies have targeted Washington State ports?
Well, you know, they got a whole bunch of heavy rocks and they got to take them a long way. So you want to look for a place where you can roll your rocks, you know, downhill to the nearest deep water port. And we happen to be, you know, on the downhill slope from Wyoming to China. And those ports are going to be the most convenient. You know, you have to have big rail capacity to get the coal out of Wyoming and to the ports. And you got to have big deep water ports that can handle these ships. And there's only a handful of places on the West Coast that have that kind of access.
What other places might they choose if Washington State ports were closed to them?
British Columbia, they already ship some coal out of British Columbia, and that's a possibility for expansion. You know, there's ports right across the river from Longview and along the Columbia River. There are ports on the Oregon side as well, so those are possibilities. And we know that these coal companies have been trolling up and down the coast, greasing palms and making friends and looking for places where their coal might be handled. They do have a limited set of options, and some of them, thankfully, you know, the public ports in Seattle and Portland and we hope Tacoma know better than to commit this incredibly damaging kind of environmental act. And it also is a huge conflict for their other port mission and their other freight. I mean, this stuff is going to be tying up railroads, tying up port capacity that ought to be used for higher value, value-added, job-creating manufactured products rather than bulk commodity export that produces almost no economic benefit on this side of the water.
How much coal is being shipped overall from the United States to Asia? I know there's some from the East Coast.
Yeah, that is primarily coal that's used in metallurgy, like for steel making. And so the volumes are not as great as what's called this thermal coal from Wyoming that's used for making power. So the volumes right now are not very high. Don't take it to the bank, but there might be 20, 30 million tons of coal a year being shipped from the U.S. now. And so we're talking about an order of magnitude expansion.
To what extent will coal shipped to China through Washington ports provide jobs in Washington state?
All jobs are attractive right now, right? Those port communities, like many communities, are hurting. People need good jobs in those communities. So I don't want to minimize the importance of jobs, even though the numbers are relatively small. In Bellingham, there'd be quite a few construction jobs building the port. But once they're built, the job numbers are in the 100 to kind of 300 range. In Longview, it's much less than that because the infrastructure is already built. So it looks like about 20 net jobs in Longview. And again, to the people who aspire to those jobs and need work in those communities, that's a welcome thing. Having said that, coal export is a terrible job strategy overall. I mean, let's remember, what do we think China's going to do with that coal other than continue to cement their manufacturing advantage over the American economy? So we get a few jobs shoveling coal into the Asian industrial machine while they make stuff and do the innovating and investing that's really the big job-creating activity.
Would you now speak about the response of environmental groups to the proposed coal shipments and give a brief timeline of what has happened over the past 6 months?
Yeah. Well, first, let me say it's a little awkward for us as Americans to be saying we don't want China to burn our coal to develop their economy so they can have the kind of economic benefits that we've enjoyed. That's an uncomfortable and somewhat hypocritical position. It is the reality of the physics of global warming that if the Asian economies develop on a coal-intensive path, we're going to bake the planet and we're all going to have catastrophic results. So we can't very well tell them, sorry, there's no room for your prosperity because we used up all the room in the atmosphere. But we can pioneer a different path to prosperity that's going to work for us for the long run, that can work for the 5 billion people who aspire to our kind of lifestyles. And that's our position and what we really need to do. Locally, we are challenging the permits on the grounds of their impacts to shorelines, to marine ecosystems, to the surrounding communities from the coal dust, and on the basis of their global warming pollution impacts, wherever that global warming pollution is released. It doesn't matter that the coal is burned in China from a global warming perspective. All that CO2 will have the same effect on our glaciers, our forests, our water supplies, as if it was burned right next door. So those impacts definitely come home to roost, and we're going to challenge these proposals on the basis of all those impacts.
Could you go into more detail about what's actually come about?
And the timeline you asked about, too. Yeah. There was a preliminary shoreline permit granted for the Longview facility. We challenged it in court, and what we found in going through the documents in discovery was that they had deceived the county and the community, and they were planning on shipping as much as 10 or even 15 times as much coal out of that facility as the permit that they applied for. They were forced to withdraw the permit. They're now starting over. They're doing some cleanup at the site where they proposed to do coal, and they'll be coming back with a permit at some point, but that one is set back a little bit by their first deceptive effort to get their terminal sited. Up in Bellingham, we expect the permitting and the environmental review process to begin this spring. That port is a proposal that's been around for a long time, at least 20 years, I think longer than that, to develop an export terminal in Cherry Point near the oil terminals up there. Originally, it wasn't really planned for coal export because nobody was thinking about exporting coal. But that's been kind of sitting on the back burner for a long time. And the prospect of now shipping this coal and all the money that comes along from the coal companies is what has lifted that proposal up sort of out of obscurity and onto the front burner. And that'll be starting to cook along this spring.
Who has the actual power to decide whether the permit will be granted?
Well, so that's both a legal question and a philosophical question. They need shoreline permits from the county and ultimately the Shoreline Hearings Board. They probably need aquatic land leases from the State Department of Natural Resources, which governs how state-owned aquatic lands are used. So that's not so much a regulatory thing. It's our land, that aquatic land that they propose to use. And what they can use it for is a matter of public policy that's administered by our Department of Natural Resources. They may need other permits. They may need Endangered Species Act exemptions. There may be other permits along the way that they'll need and that we can challenge. The philosophical answer to the question, though, is, you know, let's admit that here we are without a global treaty that is really strong enough to stop global warming. We are appallingly without a national climate policy. The country that's produced the most global warming pollution is the only developed country with no national climate policy. We should have those things in order to tackle a question like coal export, and we don't. So under the circumstances, we sort of have two choices. We can say, well, we should have had a stronger policy to prevent global warming, and since we don't, there's nothing we can do. Or we can say, hey, here we are. It's late. If we allow this and China develops all that coal capacity, we have no chance of turning back the climate crisis before it produces catastrophic results. You got to do what you can do wherever you can do it. And this coal is going to be coming right through our communities, right through our front yard. And I think everybody who's going to make a decision that has any relationship to this, a business decision, a permitting decision, a financing decision, needs to look themselves in the eye and say, am I going to be part of the solution or part of the problem?
What is your response to those who say that if the coal doesn't go through Washington ports, it will simply be shipped through other ports?
Well, again, you know, sort of back to our philosophical quandary, is that a good justification for running drugs, for distributing weapons of mass destruction, for doing other dangerous things that we all acknowledge have catastrophic results? That's the situation we're in. And to say, well, I'm going to go ahead and do it because if I don't, somebody else will, is a weak justification. The practical response to that is that they're picking these ports for a reason. This is the cheapest way, the most convenient way, the most economical way to get to those Asian markets. They have not yet proven that they can be a competitive coal supply for the Asian markets. There are other coal supplies from around the world, so they don't know yet whether they can make this pencil out. If we take the most economical, easiest option away, they have to go to the next most economical option, which it makes it that much harder and that much less likely that it happens at all. And then the other perspective is, yes, there's coal elsewhere in the world. But the question China is asking itself right now is not, gee, can I get coal from Montana tomorrow for my power plants? They have coal for their power plants tomorrow. The question they're asking themselves is, can we build out a whole economy for a billion plus people with coal-fired power plants to serve most of their energy needs and expect that we will have deep, competitive coal supplies from around the world for 50 years for all those plants? That's the question they're asking. And opening up our ports to this supply from Montana and Wyoming is like giving a big green thumbs up to that question, telling China and Asia, go ahead and build out a coal-fired economy because you're going to have all the fuel you need from America. And that's why saying no to this will have a significant impact on the direction of energy infrastructure development in Asia and ultimately on our ability to stop the climate crisis.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Casey Golden, Policy Director for Climate Solutions. Our topic is the environmental implications of allowing coal to be shipped to China through Washington State ports. Besides the coal companies, who is in favor of using Washington State ports to ship coal?
The railroads and some of the workers and labor unions in those communities would like to get those ports built and handle that coal. You know, I'm sure it's such a large-scale operation that you're going to have your sort of posse of lobbyists and lawyers and financiers who will have a hand in it. Goldman Sachs, for instance, has a hand in the Bellingham facility. But I'll tell you the interesting thing is I go to those communities and I talk to people in those communities who are thinking about the economic future of their communities. They say to me, you know, do you think this is our dream? Do you think this is the economic vision of what we want our communities to look like and how we propose to build out a strong future for our communities? No, of course not. It's not our dream, but it's here. And right now, very little else is here. And so I think those communities are very actively interested in looking at what are the alternatives for generating jobs and sustainable economical activity in their communities. Because some of them will say no to this because they think the impacts are too great. Some of them will say yes because they need the jobs. But all of them are open to the idea that there's a better way to go. There's a better way to create economic activity. There's a better way to secure their futures that doesn't foreclose the dream of a clean, sustainable economy, which is what everybody wants to leave their kids.
How are Washington state officials responding to this coal export issue?
The Department of Ecology intervened in one of the permit challenges on the issue of the need to examine the global warming pollution associated with these projects, regardless of where the pollution exists. And we appreciate that intervention. Other Washington state agencies, like the Department of Natural Resources that may have permitting authority, are getting their ducks in a row and looking at their permitting authority and thinking about, if this thing does move through the permit process, what are the right safeguards and conditions? So I would say for us as Climate Solutions, for these state agencies, this is a whole new ballgame. We're not built to handle something like this. So we're all figuring out what our authorities and our positions are going to be. And I have to say, in fairness, you know, to state agencies and local communities, when we talk about coal burning in China and global carbon trajectories, it sounds like a lot to ask a local decision maker to care about that. I remember one of the Cowlitz County commissioners said something like, all those issues about burning coal in China are a little bit above our pay grade. And I understand that feeling, because I think when we face a problem this big, all of us have that sense of, wow, can I really do anything at the scale of that problem? Am I really empowered to make a difference on something like this? Or should I just sort of avert my eyes from the bigger consequences because I can't do anything about them and just build the port in my community? And we're challenging that. We're asking people to say, no, it's not a responsible option to avert our eyes from the larger consequences. You know, the adults aren't going to come and fix all this for us. We've only got one atmosphere and one planet and one climate. We can't control everything that happens that affects that. We can't control, you know, everything that affects how much coal China burns. But we can control what happens in our communities, in our ports, in our shorelines, in our local economies. And we can make active decisions about which future we want. And we got to apply that judgment and that responsibility to these coal export decisions.
The governor of Montana, where the coal is mined, has come out strongly in favor of shipping the coal through Washington, presumably for economic reasons. Would you comment on the implications for the state of Montana for shipping the coal?
Well, you know, there's both fossil fuel economies in Montana and there's robust clean energy economies as well. You know, they have a big, valuable economic resource in their coal supplies up there. They're seeing the value of that resource decline in America as we clean up our energy supplies. And there's people who are dependent on continuing to mine that resource. There's also a lot of people in Montana who are dependent on clean water and fisheries and recreation and glaciers and Glacier National Park and Montana's famous quality of life, and coal threatens all those things. So there's economic interests on both sides of the equation in Montana. Let's face it, coal companies are powerful. They're big, concentrated economic interest, and they got a lot of their coal sitting in Montana. So if you're the governor of Montana, that's the side of the bread that you're buttered on. And, you know, it's not surprising that they have a lot of political influence on whoever the governor of Montana is. But I will tell you, we do a lot of work with people in Montana, and there's people on both sides of the economic issue up there.
What approach is Climate Solutions and other environmental groups planning to take over the next few months to address this coal export issue?
Well, we're going to organize people. We're going to organize communities. We're going to talk to people along the rail lines. We're going to work with people in the port communities. We're going to challenge the permits in court. We're going to do everything we can in those communities to make this a crossroads, not just a roadblock to coal export. Both Longview and Bellingham have very bright economic prospects in the new economy, but I can understand why a real bird in the hand with real jobs now looks attractive relative to a hypothetical clean economy. So we're going to be working in those communities, as we do in many communities, to try to make that clean energy alternative and clean economy alternative real and local and lively in those communities so they can confidently choose a different path. And then finally, we're going to be working on, you know, broader scale national and state policy solutions so that we're not ultimately running around port by port trying to figure out how to stop this, but we get our arms around the bigger policy questions about you know, ultimately, how much carbon are we going to put into the global energy commerce, and how are we going to limit that to a level that's safe with respect to preserving the atmosphere? Jim Hansen, our most distinguished climate scientist, says that we basically have to ramp down all our fossil fuel consumption in the next 20 years if humanity wishes to preserve a planet similar to the one on which civilization developed. Well, I kind of like that, but I'm attached to that planet personally. So we're going to be doing everything in our power to mobilize legally, socially, morally, in those communities, locally, and on a statewide basis to navigate this crossroads successfully and come out with our reputation as a forward-looking, innovative region, a region that can pioneer sustainable solutions. We want that reputation intact and moving forward when we're done rejecting this coal export.
What do you see as the major roadblocks to attaining success?
You know, to be honest, Diane, I think the major roadblock is the sense in our culture and our economy and our political culture that we're not responsible, that here we are in Little Washington or just a small port community. We don't have jurisdiction over global warming. And isn't that really the problem with a problem as big as climate change? Whose jurisdiction is that? Whether you're an individual, a mayor, a governor, a port commissioner, even a president, it's bigger than all of us. And I think that sense that, well, if I don't do it, somebody else is going to do it. There's nothing we can do to stop it. Resistance is futile. I think our biggest obstacle is our own fear about taking responsibility for solutions at this scale and our own doubts about whether we really have the power to make a difference. And the only thing I can say about that is we know we're not going to make a difference if we just throw up our hands. This is a direct threat, not just to our poor communities, not just to our air quality, not even just to the climate. I think it's a real threat to who we are as Northwesterners. Are we the people who avert our eyes and say somebody else is going to do it, or are we the people who take responsibility? That's the choice we got to make. You know, yes, there are legal and financial and political and obstacles along the way, but I honestly think the biggest obstacle is overcoming our own fear about deciding that it's our responsibility to take this issue on.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
You know, the last thing I wanted to say is you framed this show as about the environmental implications of coal export, and more I find that word environmental to be too small of a box for what we're talking about. Climate change is upon us now. There are 4 million people in Pakistan who are still homeless after the epic biblical floods that they had last summer. We're seeing more of that wild weather everywhere, just today in Arkansas and around the United States. The increase in those extreme weather events is directly related to putting more heat and more energy into the atmosphere and into the oceans. It's not rocket science. You put more energy in, more of it comes out as rain and extreme weather. There's a lot of people around the world feeling the impacts of that right now, and most of them are the people who did the least to cause it. That is the terrible injustice of all of this. The people who are producing the least pollution are suffering the worst of the impacts around the world. That's the injustice that we have to solve. It's not just a matter of protecting the environment we love so much. It's a fundamental matter of social and economic justice about whether the people who are creating the problem are going to take responsibility for solving it, so that the people who didn't have much to do with creating the problem don't have to bear the brunt of the impacts of our actions. That's the message I'd leave your folks with.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Casey.
Thank you, Diane. I really appreciate it.
You have just been listening to Casey Golden, Policy Director for Climate Solutions. For more information, check on the web at www.climatesolutions.org. Again, that's climatesolutions.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.